This is the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. Each week, Diana Winston, or one of our UCLA Mindful teachers, offers a talk about mindfulness to deepen our understanding and cultivate well-being. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, welcome back, everyone. So I'd like to, I'd like to read a passage and then ask you to pay attention to what you notice as I read this passage. So John was on his way to school. John was worried about the math class. He was not sure if he could control the class again today. It was not part of a janitor's duty. So what did you notice when you heard each of the sentences? Maybe just typing it in the chat. I went against my expectations, shifting understanding of a speaker's role. Yeah, interesting. Hey, first thought John was a student, but then the teacher, and he's neither. Interesting, right? Yeah, and how quickly we come up with these concepts, these models of, or these expectations and thoughts, right? John was anxious. Same four sentences, and look at how many different interpretations and ideas and perceptions. Every sentence changed my perception of John's situation. Thoughts change on who John was. Worried about the future not yet happening. Okay, interesting. Yeah, thank you. And so this is what we often do. We kind of make and revise our mental model based on the sensory input that we receive, in this case, a bunch of sentences. And how many people were aware that you were making these models in the moment that you were making them? Show of hands. Yeah, some people are. Yeah. And some people weren't, right? Definitely not his responsibility. Yeah. When I first heard these four paragraphs, I certainly wasn't aware that I was making these models, but they sure were happening. Not aware, not implicit. Okay. Yeah, thank you. But we're always trying to make meaning out of our sensory input and whatever it is that we're doing. So we have some thoughts about the body scan or the movement and how that might be. Right? And this is really, really normal and probably adaptive, right? For our survival. We are constantly monitoring the environment through our senses and making meaning of what's coming through. So I'm an occupational therapist. I work in mental health and substance use programs in Vancouver. And I'm going to just read an excerpt from one of our clients' charts. I've changed the name and gender and so on. But I'd like you to listen to this. So this client, Mark, let's say, a 38-year-old man, this is in his chart, has severe depression. It's a foster child, has lived in 5 different foster homes. No contact with biological parents, no family, no social support. Finished grade 8. Interest none. Leaves home once a month to collect his welfare check, and not interested in any resources offered by our psychiatrist. And so when I first met Mark, he told me that in fact he was interested in completing high school. He loves to read. In fact, he's an avid reader. In fact, when he completed high school, he scored in the top 2 percentile for math and English. And in fact, he didn't participate in any activities at our mental health clinic because no one actually asked him what he was interested in. So in our medical system in Canada, and perhaps in the States and elsewhere, we're often interested in a person's diagnosis, a concept, some thoughts about a person. And not so much what the person may or may not be able to do. And so when reflecting on Mark's story, I'm often reminded how often we just see just a portion of a person's life and not the whole. I'm also reminded about how often I see just a portion of my own life and not the whole of my capacity. And so we have mental constructions or maybe projections about others and about ourselves. And so how much do I miss out on the whole of my abilities and focus just on my failings? And so in our meditation practice, we are also encouraged to kind of examine below some of our concepts, some of the superficialities, and to really investigate our own mental constructions and our projections as they may or may not come up during our meditation, to really wake up and to be more aware of the truth of the moment. And so one of the what someone here said, feeling restless and then examining and noticing and feeling the sensations allowed them to feel a little bit more at ease. And so not just giving in to the restlessness or the discomfort, but really to be curious about what's happening. So the talk today is about investigation, and we started this with our mindful movement and our body scan, and looking at how investigation can help us to see what is as opposed to what we think is here. And so as I said earlier, investigation in Buddhist psychology is considered one of the seven factors of awakening. The other six are mindfulness, the sense of joy, of tranquility, of concentration, equanimity, and mindfulness. And while it's related to mindfulness, it's not exactly the same thing. So mindfulness is the noting and the equanimous sort of relationship to experience, whereas investigation is really recognizing that perhaps thinking is happening, and examines how thinking can affect the mind and the body, and how the mind can and body can affect thinking. So we are invited to, with investigation, to really bring some curiosity, both into the body and as well as what we hold in our thoughts as and beliefs and projections. So if we are truly curious about our experience, we can see what is truly here as compared to what we believe and think is here. Okay. So besides reducing stress, mindfulness really is about clear seeing, right? What's here? How am I getting caught in my cycles of reactivity or suffering? And so when we bring some curiosity and a beginner's mind, as Anne said, I can feel like my eyes can see better too. We can investigate, we can look at phenomena and that create problems for us, perhaps some our doubts about ourselves, our anxieties and cravings. We can also look at some of the wholesome states of joy and happiness and what brings these wholesome and positive states about. So when I did my first meditation, silent meditation retreat about 20 years ago, I had never done anything as ridiculous as that, being silent for 10 days. Are you kidding? So I walked to my dorm and I met my roommates, and then everyone around me was like walking around, avoiding eye contact. No one looked at me. Some looked downright hostile and upset when I even smiled at them. So I was so flabbergasted. I kind of made up all kinds of, in retrospect, very unkind stories about each of my roommates. Why is he so unfriendly? What's his problem? Maybe he was laid off. And as a result, I actually created a lot of suffering for myself. And then I went to the dining hall, or to the the meditation hall later on in the evening after dinner, and we were introduced to the concept of silence. And in that moment, all these projections and all these concepts that I had about my roommates, all these judgments kind of disappeared in that moment. And so knowing the real reason why my roommates were silent, avoided eye contact with me, really allowed me to let go of these mental constructions. And as a result, my feelings of dis-ease. And so while the external conditions, is still silence all around me, hadn't changed, my interpretations and my projections had, and that led to a bit more ease. Not that the silent retreat was actually all that easeful. It was actually terrible. But here I am. So being awake to our experience doesn't imply that the conditions of the world have changed. The outside might stay the same, but perhaps some of our erroneous thoughts and our projections and constructions might have shifted. It's kind of like when we wake up after a good nap, we feel a bit clearer and re ready to take on our tasks. Similarly, when we investigate some of our problematic judgments and constructions more closely, we can see more clearly what is actually happening. So really, investigation is about seeing how suffering and unhappiness and dis-ease is created in our lives. And some of the things that mindfulness meditation can help us to see is that a lot of these concepts and these projections, there is no I. Often our beliefs are kind of formed in a moment, right? In reaction to an incident, like it did with my fellow meditators. Some other beliefs are based on what others say about us, and also what we say about ourselves. I am sad. I am angry. I am the loser. So that's often an I and a personalization. Other beliefs might originate in our experience of an ongoing experience of chronic pain. Perhaps some of my patients in the cancer clinic have chronic pain and experience ongoing suffering. We might have an ongoing experience of a low mood or anxiety. And then we conclude that I'll always feel this way. I'm never going to get better. I'll always be in pain. When I had my frozen shoulder would never go away, and I will always be painful. Okay, so that was my thought, and it was real. But these projections can also happen during our meditation. Maybe we feel disappointed if we kind of fail to meet some goal, such as feeling relaxed or achieving some insight, and then we conclude that I'm a bad meditator. And this happens. Frozen shoulder is the worst. I absolutely agree. It never goes away. At least it seemed in the moment. Yeah. Or maybe we had a really good meditation and we're the best meditator in the world. Or when some of you thanked me for the meditation, I thought I'm just the best meditation teacher in the world, which I'm not, by the way. Okay, so and so our moods, so anyway, it can go both ways. So and also our moods, our inner experience can affect how we experience the world. When I had depression, the world looked like a really dark place. That it would never be different. There was no joy. People were scary, and I would always be this way. When I feel happy, the mood, the world becomes a very friendly, inviting one. And it'll always be this way, right? But we know, of course, unfortunately, or fortunately, in the case of Frozen Shoulder, that everything changes from one moment to the next. Maybe not in the case of Frozen Shoulder, but at some point it does change. During a meditation, we might have a thought that this guy that's droning on and on might never shut up, or we might have some repetitive, ruminative thoughts. And then it shifts to this knee pain that developed, and all those thoughts seem to have disappeared. And then the bell rings. I didn't ring a bell today, but I did say, open your eyes. And poof, all there go those constructions, those thoughts, that knee pain. But in the moment, we might firmly believe in our thoughts, our ruminations, the emotions that will never end, or the knee pain that is going to end my soccer career. And so with investigation, we don't really wait for our external conditions to change. In the midst of our meditation, our mindfulness practice, we can instead kind of look beneath and around the knee pain. We can look beneath and around the thoughts and emotions. We can look beneath and around the restlessness and explore the sensations of the body and see if it's true that things actually do shift at least a little bit. With this investigation, we can also notice what happens when we resist what is unavoidable, or we argue against the unarguable, as some meditation teacher called Christina Feldman said. We also, with our investigation, can see that our thoughts, many of them, come and go unbidden. It's not like we actually produce these thoughts. There was a study out of Toronto a few years ago, about 4 or 5 years ago, that found that the average person generates about 5,000 to 6,000 thoughts a day. Imagine that, 5,000 to 6,000 thoughts a day. I don't know about you, but I can't generate that many thoughts. So investigation, we see our constructions for what they are, and to see what is true. No wonder I'm tired. Yes, Paula, absolutely. And speaking of change, you know, when I look at photos of myself in the past, all the way to now, you know, from my 20s to now, I remember thinking that in my 20s, I had a certain view of myself that seemed would be eternal. I was a geologist at the time. I was married. I was this mountaineer. I was an explorer, a traveler. And I always thought I'd be that person. In my 30s and 40s, that shifted with a bunch of chronic illnesses. And now in my 60s, I realized that actually I'm not at all the same person as I was even in my 50s. And yet, holding on to some of those concepts was quite painful, and noticing that life happens, that life changes, and agreed, tired without doing anything. Yes, okay. And so we see this as well in our meditation. It can go from emotional storms and thoughts spewing in one moment, and then to restlessness and calm, and then the dog barks, and then we start to feel hungry, and all those thought storms and emotional turbulence that was so prescient in the beginning seem to have disappeared. And so yeah, great. Thanks, Jelly. Yes, I always will, right? Thank you. And so with investigation, we were invited to develop an observer stance, so this sort of decentered stance of how suffering is created and perpetuated, how our experience is personalized how and when suffering is relieved and more ease can be achieved. By having this more decentered on or impersonal stance of our experience, we can also see the impermanence of experience, that all things do at some point change, if we allow it to do so. And so by noticing the arising and passing of these experiences, the arising and passing of negative mind states, this investigation importantly allows us to move towards more skillful responses. And so in our meditation, for example, if we're doing a mindful movement or we're doing a walking meditation or body scan, we can pause at some points and just to notice, to investigate, what is this experience right now? Is this actually happening? Is this true? We can ask, what is the quality of my mind? How am I relating to my experience in this moment? Is it with aversion? Is it with craving and grasping? Is it a sense of numbing out? What does that sense of craving, aversion, and numbing out feel like in the body? So these are different ways of investigating. Can I feel the tightness in my chest and in my what are these shoulders with this concept of anxiety? What does anxiety actually feel like? Because curiosity can be a very good antidote for anxiety as we explore not just the concept of anxiety, but the actuality of the experience in the body, this shifting nature of the tightness of the chest, this increased heart rate and breath, and so on. Often when we're unaware of our automatic reactions, we can kind of get carried down by this river of reactivity, kind of. And so investigation invites us to actually pause in the middle of that river and to investigate what's here. And a great way to do that is to actually notice that we are thinking, notice that we are, that the mind, not we, the mind is generating these concepts, these thoughts, these projections. Notice that the body is reacting in response to these projections and these concepts. And so noticing the relationship between thought and body and thought. Okay, so I'm going to and then meeting this process with kindness, with gentleness, and with some acceptance, and with mindfulness, with equanimity. So we're working together with mindfulness in our investigation. So I'm going to stop there, or at least pause, because stop seems quite permanent, and invite any questions. And if there aren't any questions, we'll do another meditation. Thank you so much for that question in the chat. What if a person is in an overwhelming state? Is it possible that investigation? Absolutely. Oh, am I? No, you're not looking at it pessimistically. So, so this is one of the reasons I introduced the window of tolerance at the beginning. So, if we're talking about feeling overwhelmed as we investigate, perhaps some strong emotions and thoughts, perhaps some trauma responses, then we might want to just back off and do something else, and slowly, over time, maybe gently and kindly, bring our investigation back. But first and foremost, if there's a sense of overwhelm, you might want to maybe stop the investigation and do something else, open the eyes, move around, and then revisit later. I'm not sure. That's a very short, quick response, but was there a follow-up to that, Saeed? Okay, thank you. Yvonne, thanks for the question. By the end of your first 9 day silent, how did you feel about the process? Oh my goodness, that's a big question. I had lots of different concepts about the process, but here I am, 20 years later, I returned to it. So I think it was a really good one for me as a way to kind of deepen my quite superficial practice at that point, and allowed me to look at thoughts and emotions that were quite challenging, and invited more kindness into to how I brought attention to my experience. Hadn't really thought about that in 20 years, but I think that's kind of how I would land on that now. It was probably quite different at the time. Thanks for that question, Yvonne.
I have a question.
Yes, is that Shelley? Hi, Shelley. Go ahead.
Hi. When I meditate and I'm trying to watch my thoughts or look at my thoughts, a lot of times I feel like I'm not thinking, like they disappear.
And
And it's freaky. I don't know.
so interesting, right? Is it not what you expected?
No, because the thing is about watching your thoughts, so I expect to be able to watch my thoughts.
There we go.
There
So we
we
have,
go, true.
well, right? We have an expectation that it will be a certain way, and your actual experience was that they come and go, right?
Well, they just. Either
It's
they're not there, or like I don't know what I'm thinking. I mean, is that what I'm thinking then? But or I feel something, and as soon as I go to investigate, it's gone.
That often happens. Yes, thank you. So this is what we were talking about, how we have an experience, in this case the experience of thoughts going as we investigate, versus my thoughts will always be here. Right, so there's a concept, my thoughts will always be here, and the actuality is that when we investigate that statement or that concept, the opposite is true, or something else is actually present. So in a sense, you're waking up to what is true as opposed to what you think is true. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Would you say investigation is a matter of being curious? Yes. I think so. Being curious, being open, bringing a beginner's mind as if seeing it for the first time. Yes, I think so. Let's see here. As I meditated, my suffering became smaller. Okay. So noticing some change in your practice, hey, Kato. And then Daniel, since I started practicing sitting meditation, I felt happier. Friends asking me how meditation can make one happier. Okay, such a good. Okay. Yeah, so John, can investigation itself create anxiety? Absolutely. Yes. And then we investigate what that anxiety is all about. So one of the ways to investigate anxiety is to see beyond the word anxiety and to see the actuality of it. So for me, when I was have been very anxious in the past, and so these days there's a lot to be anxious about. Is it about the body? Is it about thoughts? Or is it about both? Or is it about how they ping on each other? So part of the investigation is really not just to have an idea of what anxiety is, but to actually investigate, how do I know anxiety is here? How do I know this anxiety is here? So we're in some ways deconstructing our experience into what we call the building blocks or components. Often our experience is comprised of building blocks of thoughts, building blocks of emotions, building blocks of those of you who have done meditation for a while, the feeling tones, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, and the building block of the physical sensations in the body. I hope that's, yeah, that's a kind of hopefully that. Any follow-up to that, John?
Hi. So my thing is more like you're using it's kind of a form of doubt, like Descartesian doubt. I don't know if that makes any sense to you. But the question of keep asking questions about the questions and where that takes you, I guess, is what I was trying to get at. Because if you think about this philosopher Descartes, it gets you into quite deep waters.
So here we're staying more in terms of being curious. So for example, with anxiety, about what, not so much why, not the why of anxiety, but the process of anxiety in this moment. So with this practice, we're really staying in the present moment, not so, and not to discount the past and the importance of what came out, and as well as our social environment, right? But in this moment, what is it that I can manage, and what is it that gives rise to this anxiety? How do I know I have anxiety in this moment?
Well, isn't what you said, though, it seems to me, is you're going to go outside the range of tolerance is one of the things that's likely to happen. But it doesn't necessarily tell you how. I mean, you were doing something, but you find yourself in or outside the range.
You could, you might, So one of the ways to work with that is to kind of stay with a part of the body that is not so anxious, perhaps. You know, if there's a part of the, so when I feel anxious, I get a really heavy heart palpitations. So I
Right.
might explore maybe around my fingers or my arms, and then maybe move my attention from the arms into the chest and then away from the chest, or move the attention from my feet to the chest, so that we're not kind of drowning in the part of the body that is the most activated, and then slowly
Okay.
bringing the attitude of kindness. Quite frankly, we're not just investigating for the sake of investigation. We're bringing investigation in order to be kind, I think, is maybe the key. So kind investigation, curiosity, and kindness to the part of myself that can't be kind in this moment to this anxiety.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. So we're letting go of the question why. Not that that's not unimportant, but in this practice, we're saving that for maybe our counselor. You know, if there are some, you know, compelling reasons or you know, thought, yeah, so sort of other reasons, then it can work quite nicely with our counselors. All right. Okay, so thank you, everyone. I think we have 5 minutes. So why don't we end with a short meditation, unless there are any other questions or comments? Oh, sorry, I missed one from Maureen. In listening to the sentences about John, it was additional information that formed a more complete picture. Is that why you suggest investigation as a strategy to reduce? Yes. Yeah. That's definitely one of the strategies to get out of perseverative thinking. And also one of the reasons I used that passage was that just to see how quickly our mind gets into making mental models. Automatically. It's not our fault. It's just the way the mind works. Yeah. Okay. All right. So thanks, everyone. So let's just end with a short meditation where I'll invite you to continue to bring some kind investigation into your experience. So, in whatever posture you're in, noticing that, noticing how the body feels in that posture. Noticing what's around, in thoughts, in feelings, in body sensations. You can close the eyes or lower the gaze. Noticing what's here. What is truly here? Dropping below our projections into our thoughts and emotions and body sensations, and maybe even some urges, some impulses. And now, having gotten a sense of what's here, our different components of experience, gathering your attention like it was a spotlight to an area of the body that feels relatively safe, at ease, calm, relaxed. And this could be your breath, where you feel it strongly or vividly. Or it could be the sensations in the feet or the hands. It's a part of the body that feels relatively at ease. And then honing or holding your attention here for a few moments. When attention wanders to something else, one of those 6,000 thoughts. So you know this is normal, this is what happens. Just bringing it back to your home base or this part of the body that feels at ease. And now, from this place, allowing your attention to expand, to take in the sensations of your entire body from head to toe, from inside to outside. Open and receptive to any and all sensations anywhere in the entire body. And now allowing the eyes to open if they are closed, and then looking around your room or the space that you're in. Taking in your space, colors, textures, movement, or stillness. And then when you're ready, letting go of this brief practice and coming back to the Zoom screen as we say goodbye. Thank you so much, everyone, for participating, for meditating together from different corners of the world. It's been lovely to practice with you, and thanks for your kind attention.
Thanks for listening to the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. For more information about our classes, workshops, and retreats, please visit uclahealth.org/UCLA Mindful. Join us each week for a new session on mindfulness.